Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you, I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Hi, this is Howes New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight we're going to be taking a look back at some of the bigger news stories in Brooklyn real estate in the past week or so. And we'll be getting to that in a moment, so stay tuned for Bob. Yeah, just got knocked off. start all over again. Welcome, everyone, to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. Tonight we're going to be talking about what happened in Brooklyn real estate this past month, and there have been a whole host of new topics and new events and developments that I think everybody would be interested in. Wouldn't you say that, Jason?
Hey, Bob. Sorry about the technical difficulties. I would say that. I would agree. We had a couple of very interesting stories, and I think the one that I found the most interesting, I will kick it off with, is the history right out here on Shore Road in Bay Ridge of the Shore Road Hospital. I'm always fascinated when you hear about some of the stories that areas or homes or buildings have to tell, and this one you really would have to dig for because the structure that it used to be is no longer there. On the current site is a, I think, is a seniors complex, and it used to be at one time when Shore Road was the place to own a summer home, I guess, at the turn of the century. The mansion that was there was owned by William Kenny. And it eventually became the Brooklyn the Shore Road Hospital, where a lot of influential people had their babies. And I think that that's a pretty interesting story. I don't know what you know of the history or what you think about this story, but it's nice to know that there's such rich history just a few blocks from where we are.
Yes, well, you know, what people sometimes forget about Bay Ridge is that we were a summer destination for people in the middle of Brooklyn or in Manhattan. They would travel out here. We had a beautiful shoreline. We still do, although the Bell Parkway rims it. There is a nice bike and pedestrian path along there. But Bay Ridge was a summer resort area, and there was a lot of boating and bathing and aquatic activities going on. And we forget. I mean, we think of Shore Road nowadays as back-to-back co-op buildings, apartment buildings from one end to the other. And I don't think that there, with the exception maybe of some buildings within the Fontbonne complex, are there any remnants of the heyday in Bay Ridge when celebrities came to spend their summers by the water and enjoy the cool breezes coming off the Narrows. So having said that, yes, we envision Shore Road as side-to-side cooperative apartment buildings when there were actually a variety of large mansions. Here you point out that this fellow, Kenny, built a mansion. It then morphed into a hospital, and yes, probably a lot of early Bay Ridgeites, you know, somehow passed through there. But, you know, as progress went on, old and beautiful got knocked down. And now we have what is known as Shore Hill, a very nice senior complex in Bay Ridge that, you know, a very necessary residence for many of our Bay Ridge seniors. But nonetheless, under the foundation of the Shore Hill complex is an awful lot of history from the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century when fine mansions and summer homes were really the standard type of building that you would see along shore. So it is pretty interesting and reflects, I mean, now
Bay Ridge is pretty much a small town community. Some people say bedroom community. But back then it had a whole different type of allure, and that was as a summer destination.
It is. It's a nice walk now if you just stroll along Shore Road and you kind of look down at the water and a lot of the parks that are there now. Excuse me. But I can imagine at that time when it wasn't developed and there wasn't the Bell Parkway and there wasn't the parks there and the structures that are there now, it must have seemed like from the people who lived on Shore Road and those mansions, it must have seemed like the wilderness and to walk along those paths and down to the water or down to their boats or just stroll through that area must have seemed like quite the great outdoors. And just like so much of Manhattan, the Gilded Age in New York that hasn't survived, it seems like even less so has survived in our own little nook of what the Gilded Age in New York might have looked like in our area. But it is an interesting history.
A couple communities like this still exist out on the North Shore of Long Island, where you don't have houses built right out to the water, but you have fairly substantial homes and separated by maybe a forest of several hundred yards wide, and then after you emerge from the forest, you get to the waterfront. So a few remnants of that type of setting are still around, but now, as we know, painfully from Sandy, people have built right up to the water, and that's not good either.
Well, speaking of forests and wooded areas, will bring us up into our next item, which was pretty interesting. One of my favorite places in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, is being recognized by none other than the White House and Michelle Obama, who is bestowing a medal on the Botanical Gardens for their commitment to working with kids and teaching kids about plants in their children's garden, and just being the educational facility that they have been for all things horticulture. What are you at this and the Botanical Gardens in general, which has undergone quite a lot of renovation and facelifts over the past couple of years?
Well, I spent many a day as a teenager in a photography class, being a member of a photography class, probably in Severian, going down to the Botanical Gardens and photographing down there. Lovely area. I have, a jewel in Brooklyn that sometimes is overlooked a little. But what a wonderful resource. I remember being, in fact, now, as this, I don't know if we're at the beginning or the middle, or hopefully we have spring, but we have the cherry blossoms going on down there. We also have a Japanese group going on down there. Sorry, we all have a little bit of that spring cough here in the studio. Just a beautiful, beautiful location.
Yeah, and I know the boy, it sounds like we've got the high pollen count from the Botanical Gardens has infested the studio. But if you haven't been in a while, the visitor center at the Botanical Gardens is quite an impressive structure now. It's pretty unbelievably spectacular. It blends into the environment really well, seamlessly, you might say. And if to look at it from above, when you walk along the upper pathway, you almost don't even see it. It blends into the environment. Again, by design, obviously, the architects really did an amazing job to make the roof of the visitor center pretty much have plant life growing on top of it. So it really is a botanical building. It's just a great looking structure, and they have done so many nice things with it. It was already a great destination to take a to spend a weekend or a lazy Saturday or Sunday afternoon and just stroll around the grounds. But again, if you've seen it lately, the place that you really need to check out when you go there is actually the Visitor Center building, because of that new design, and it's quite an architectural accomplishment to kind of blend that in seamlessly with the environment there. And you don't even think you're in Brooklyn.
Right. You think you're somewhere, in a beautiful, maybe Victorian garden.
Not that you don't want to think you're in Brooklyn, but it's just it's a nice departure from the traffic that's going on just a few short feet away.
Yeah, so you still hear those fire engines and ambulances going by. But Jason, we're not going to talk about any more greenhouse or plant type stories anymore in the springtime as the pollen count.
That story almost forced us to seek oxygen. So let's move on. Let's get out of that story. There's an interesting piece over on BizNow about the Brooklyn Army Terminal. It's fascinating. Something that you've passed and you've driven by, or you know it's there. You pass it hundreds of times and you never really give it any thought, and then you see just the rich history the Brooklyn Army Terminal has. And no matter how old you are, you've probably heard stories about what it was in its heyday and the booming area that it was during World War II, given the nature of the productivity that was going on there. But just so many interesting little tidbits about it, and I'll let you kind of elaborate on some of those.
Yeah, well, it is. You're right, Jason. It's one of those properties that you drive by all the time on 2nd Avenue in Sunset Park that you wonder what the heck goes on there, and it seems relatively sleepy. A lot of cars always park there. I think maybe some dealers park their inventory of cars or trucks there. I think there's actually there's a car dealer there now actually maybe does some servicing there. And the building itself is very well kept, but doesn't ever seem to be a lot of hustle and bustle. But interesting article that we did see on the about the Brooklyn Army Terminal reminded us how important a property this was during World War II. It was probably one of the largest staging areas to send both troops and equipment and weaponry and food overseas. And if you get an opportunity to look at some of these photos online of the Brooklyn Army Terminal, it is a pretty serious-looking building where must have been buzzing and bustling with activity during World War II, and thereafter dwindled down as manufacturing jobs left the city for overseas, and now is seeing a renaissance of light manufacturing, incubator type businesses starting up there, and developers realizing that they have all this space and can really utilize it for and repurpose it, for light manufacturing, incubator style work, and I think they also have some food companies working out of there also. And as Americans' manufacturing becomes a little more smaller and a little more specialized, this type of property is probably well suited to going in that direction.
It's also one of those situations that really is fitting to use the phrase "if these walls could talk," because you could just imagine what it must have been like to be sitting there or just recording the activity that was going on and all of the just the unbelievable amount of human production that was the people power that was there, and the Rosie the Riveters and the all the production, and then also the people that came out. Elvis Presley shipped out apparently from this building, from this very area, and when you see what the amount of renovation that has gone into it, something to the tune of $175 million of work being done, and the song and a dance that it was sold to the city by from the Army in 84 for $8 million, can you imagine a property like that, what its real, you know, dollar value would be, especially when I look at that and I think, my God, what if they turned that into almost a community in and of itself where these were co-ops, what something like that might look like.
You know, you're right. It could be a self-contained community, a huge parking area, waterfront location, towards the southern end of the property is a big open lot. Mainly, that lot exists for trains to be brought over from New Jersey to hook up with the Long Island rail lines. Hard to believe that they have to a train could travel across the country, end up in New Jersey at a dead stop, have to get on a ferry, a single car at a time, come over, and then land over in at the southern end of the Army terminal. But it is an incredible piece of land. And, you know, I think I was in the property on one occasion, and I was struck by the solidness of this. I mean, I think this is solid walls and ceilings and supports. The ceilings, to my recollection, weren't all that high. But the thing that did struck me is I think it was all solid concrete, and it was solidly built, and it's certainly, you know, been around for 100 years and will probably be around for another 100 years. So that's the Brooklyn Army Terminal, the property we always pass by, wonder what the heck it is. In its heyday, it was very important, fell into a little bit of disrepair. But as the economy starts to rebound, people start going in for light manufacturing, smaller operations, this is an ideally suited property for them.
And you wonder if they'd ever turn it into Brooklyn's own version of Battery Park City.
It's, who knows?
There. But now let's talk about other properties in Brooklyn that are starting to have pretty staggering numbers associated with it, and the people that own them. And in Brownstone, Brooklyn, this is obviously an area we revisit often, because it is steeped in history itself, and it's always a hot commodity on the real estate market. But the story that came out of the Gothamist about the people who own in Brownstone, Brooklyn, and the brackets that they're in. Well, what did you think about that?
Well, you know, the funny thing that actually struck me was not the price of the properties or the types of properties or the locations of the properties, but this is almost racial profiling of hipsters and yuppies. And if I were one of those people, I would be bringing a lawsuit to stop racially profiling me as a person who wouldn't mind the bodega going out and a Dunkin' Donuts going in, or a Duane Reade going in. And you know, they do say things like maybe they're looking for places that will start selling Cronut, and they really don't understand why is everybody talking about gentrification. But you know, it turns out to be racial profiling for hipsters and yuppies. But back to the real estate angle of it, yes, there is a group of people, we won't you know, drop it all on hipsters and yuppies, who love Brownstone, Brooklyn. These properties exist primarily in Park Slope and Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Cobble Hill, the Heights, and Bed-Stuy. And these properties are going for astronomical numbers. And yes, there is a certain charm to a brownstone building. You know, the architecture is certainly unique. The building material is very attractive. But what we really have are fully attached homes with almost railroad-style rooms. Yes, maybe high ceilings and some woodworking detail, but at the end of the day, these are really fully attached three- and four-family homes that just happen to be made out of brownstone. But be that as it may, that's what attracts a certain group of people, and they are buying up these properties like hotcakes.
And also makes you wonder, they have all this information on the folks that are there, all this all these numbers about what they earn and what they spend, and obviously it opens up the whole discussion to they become targets to businesses like the upscale businesses that might say, hey, this is a great place to move into this area because these folks here are spending so much money, we can kind of have this information. It makes you wonder how they collect this data, just from the most personal information about your finances, right down to the language that you use. That the people are most likely to use the word dude and bro. It's unbelievable, and it really makes you scratch your head to know that the amount of minutia that's out there that people can mine to target you as a potential consumer.
I like the one line where they say the people who live there most likely have paid someone to stand online to get you cronuts, and then they complain later on that they weren't warm when they were hand-delivered to you, regardless of whether they were supposed to be warm or not. And these type of buyers also would probably like artisanal-flavored mayonnaise store in their neighborhood. So, I'm just thinking back from the real estate angle. I'm wondering if we turn back the clocks 100 years, what would people in the early 1900s think of brownstones? Would they attribute the same type of, fanciness, to the properties that we do in the 1990s and 2000s? Or did they serve some other utilitarian purpose back then, and it was no great shakes or no big difference to live in a brownstone as opposed to a brick or a frame or a stucco home? Interesting, we could find that.
That is an interesting way to look at it, and it makes you wonder if 100 years from now if the studio apartment will be looked back on as with such reverence as the brownstone buildings.
Yeah, studio, brownstone Brooklyn, studio Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of neighborhoods, this I found in the New York Times to be a pretty, I don't know how, I was kind of split down the middle. I felt that this was interesting. It sounds like a fun story, but at the same time, I thought, you know what, maybe this is a little bit too personal. But you could actually take tours of people's homes and gardens and all throughout New York, and just in Brooklyn alone, you could go to Brooklyn Heights and take a tour of a 1829 home and an 1860s home from the Brooklyn Heights Association, and then you can look in, obviously, Park Slope. There's some tours and Flatbush, and I was wondering, what areas do you think that aren't covered by some of these in this list or in Brooklyn that you might think would be ripe for a tour of homes and gardens?
Well, a couple of comments, Jason. I was actually struck by a couple of things by this article. One is that Brooklyn was had a good number of the tours.
Very well represented.
Out of all, where we were well represented, correct. And yes, I don't know how I'd feel about a couple hundred people walking, through my house. How is that controlled? And the question of what neighborhoods have we missed? Well, I know Bay Ridge has walking tours. We have lovely homes of all different styles and some great Victorian homes. So Bay Ridge might have been in the mix. Sunset Park, Sunset Park is loaded with brownstones in the mix. Maybe some, let me think where else, Red Hook, really a different type of, you know, you're going to see one of everything down in Red Hook. A little industrial, a little residential, waterfront, parkfront. So maybe those are some of the neighborhoods that are yet to be made into a house and garden tour. But certainly Brooklyn is well represented, you know, on the house tours.
Yeah, well, for $25 a pop, maybe it's time to get the house in order and start hosting guests and then having that other residual income trickle in from showing off your house.
Yes. Who would have thought?
Now, let's move on to one of the last stories we're going to touch on today. This is actually pretty interesting. What do you know about these properties in Brooklyn that are being rescued and renovated?
Well, yeah, this is an interesting story that we saw in the Brooklyn Record about a couple properties that certainly they were different uses, but are now being repurposed as residential. And the one thing that really struck me was how Catholic school buildings, you know, many of the Catholic schools in Brooklyn and throughout New York metropolitan area, because social economic changes, have closed. And probably because of a variety of reasons, they're not usable for other type of school settings. Maybe they don't have handicapped accessibility. Maybe they don't have enough elevators. Maybe who wants to walk up four or five flights of stairs to the top floor? These buildings have basically been closed, and developers are now looking at them with a different eye, looking at their architecture, looking at the amount of work that was put in to, you know, build the school, make it attractive 100 years ago. Huge windows, very high ceilings, and, you know, it's very attractive to people to have high ceilings, huge windows. And I don't know how you'd feel about, you know, buying a condo that used to be your second grade classroom, but there they are doing it.
It's well, from womb to tomb. It is interesting to see what one man's trash can turn into another man's treasure.
And don't forget, you know, we're talking about schools. Before this, there have been churches that have been turned into condos. I think that's a touch on the eerie side.
Yeah, a little bit. Just to think, you know, what some of these structures were and how they, you know, they become derelict, and then, you know, what once was a failed enterprise could then be turned into magically into the most swanky, trendy co-ops or apartments to live in, and then all of a sudden it is that building, that once cast aside building, is now trendy and hot again.
It just goes to show you that we've run out of land and we've run out of room to build, and we have to do something with what we got. And we're, you know, developers are reimagining what we couldn't even imagine, turning, you know, commercial properties into residential, hot residential properties.
What's that? The truism about investing in real estate, buy land because they're not making any more of it.
They are not making any more of it.
So I guess you have to just dress up what's on it.
Absolutely.
And with that, I think we've come to the end of our a nice array of really interesting stories that have cropped up in the past week or so in Brooklyn real estate news.
Yes, we did a pretty good job of highlighting all of the exciting and interesting things that are going on in the ever-changing field of Brooklyn real estate. So this concludes our show for tonight. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And thanks for all of the articles that were submitted for our review about what's going on in Brooklyn real estate this month. This is Housing New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.